Okay, well, last week you were talking about the justice of God.
Right.
Now, there were, and I won't say a number of people, but I was asked about this, and I would ask for you to respond regarding your statement in the area of the Jews being somewhat passive in their being pacifist rather than aggressive when it comes to governments, et cetera, et cetera. Now, does that make sense to you?
Can you give me just a little bit more of a...
Marvin, give me some more. Well, come here. Now, I'm going to let him tell you. See, I knew I'd get him in there. I'd sucker him in. He didn't want to talk. All right, this is Marvin Hyde. Okay, and he's going to tell you what the impression he got.
You were speaking of the... You were speaking of the militia groups and that...
That's correct.
And that you couldn't see where the government would tolerate them in their existence when they are vocal against the government. To me, living in the society we live in, I don't understand that. And then you have to balance that against, you know, the Torah society, which is we're not at yet. Then, in all of that, I see that when you look at the nation of Israel, they've been passive so long. Why seem to be there? And, you know, there comes a place where if you don't stand up against evil, then it'll just totally overrun you. And do you wait for God to do it all, or do you take part yourself?
Okay. All right. Now, let me address that question. The first part I don't understand too clearly, but let me say this. What I mentioned last week is that God, you see, when people ask questions like, how could certain things happen, you know? Like, why didn't God save the children? What I tried to explain last week was that according to Torah, the challenge of man, the challenge that God placed before man, is to use his mind, his intellect, his rationality. And that's why God placed him in a rational world. Now, when you have a rational world, man has to use the tool that God gave him, namely his mind, in order to be able to understand how this rational world works and use his mind, not his emotions, his mind, and then he can be successful. Now, what I said last week was it would be impossible for God to create a rational world at the same time have this world work irrationally, which means if somebody would throw a baby out of a window, suddenly the baby would fly up in the air. Then laws of gravity would not exist. Now, God does not change the laws. The laws are here, all the laws that the prophets speak about, the laws of nature. And by the way, the prophets are the first ones to ever speak about the laws of nature. It wasn't till much later, I believe it was Newton, that they came with a concept of the laws of nature. But the prophets had the concept of the laws of nature. The laws of nature are the creation. That's part of the rational world that he created. We're supposed to study and understand how these laws work, because these laws work with divine wisdom. And we're supposed to live according to the in the framework of these laws. Okay? And also laws concerning the human mind, psychology. And everything we do is supposed to be based on understanding. Now, therefore, God does not interrupt the given order, because then the whole challenge of life would be impossible. Then we'd be facing a world that's irrational. Things, rocks would be flying up instead of down. Things would be working arbitrarily. So God does not intervene in his system, because that is our challenge, to live with our wisdom and our knowledge according to the world that God gave to us. So it is impossible. It will be impossible for God to give us a world that works according to rationality, expects us to use a rationality, and at the same time keep breaking these laws, which would mean we don't live in a rational world. So the fool would have the same effect, as it would have the same results as the wise person. That's what I mentioned last week. Now, I do not wish to get into political issues. I know everybody has their own opinion in politics. I just try to teach Torah. So I just used an example. What I said was that there are two in the Torah. If you look at the ideas in the Torah, you'll see there are two responsible entities. One is the individual, and the other is society. And that's why you have in the laws and the seven laws of Noah. You have the seven laws of Noah are spoken to two entities, individual. That's the first six laws. But then that seventh law is a law that is spoken not to an individual, but to the society. A society is a responsible element. Now, when you say it's responsible, it means that it can do harm. It can kill innocent people. If that were not the case, in other words, every time an innocent person was about to die, somehow magically God would save him, again, you would not have a rational. So that would be impossible. And as Maimonides says, God does not do the impossible, and we do not maintain that God can do the impossible, because the impossible is impossible because God dictated that it is impossible. So it's God's wisdom that makes things impossible, and God does not do the impossible. So therefore, it would be impossible for God to give us a world that doesn't work, that he constantly changes and expect us to see wisdom over here. We wouldn't be able to study laws. So therefore, once there's responsibility, if man is charged with responsibility, it means he can destroy his life as an individual, or a society can destroy lives, and a society can destroy innocent lives. The statement of the Talmud is that the righteous are taken by the sins of the generation, which means the righteous can die. If a righteous person could not die due to a society cannot be responsible. There wouldn't be any responsibility. It means you can be totally irresponsible and everyone's going to be fine. That's not the way things work. We have responsibility and we have to live according to rationality. Now, what I just gave an example. I said, in my opinion, our government many times protects the criminal rather than the good person. And I said that I can understand rights of freedom of speech and rights of privacy, but when you see a group whose philosophy is overtly anti-democracy and anti-government, to say that these people cannot be investigated because this would represent an infringement on their privacy, to my mind, is senseless. Does not make any sense. And in the 70s, originally, you know, the government used to investigate these groups, and that's why this never happened before. Then in the 70s, they changed the law, and they said, no, they have rights of privacy. So if we're going to accord rights of privacy to belligerent groups that are crazies, basically, that are not operating according to rationality, then I say that we are responsible. We have a responsibility. And now if evil occurs, we cannot say, well, why didn't God save those children? Just like you cannot say, well, if you go to sleep and you're living on the fifth floor in an apartment house and your children fall out the window, well, why didn't God catch them? You know? Because then there would be no human responsibility, and we would not be living in a rational world. And that is not the world that God created for man. The moment God placed man in a rational world, it means there's cause and effect, things work according to rationality, and you are responsible. And if you live a certain way, you're going to have a certain set of results. If you live another way, you're going to have another set of results. Now, with regard to Jews being pacifists, in my opinion, I agree. I do not believe that is the proper mentality that the Torah describes. The Torah does describe a pacifistic mentality. The Torah describes a just mentality. King David was not a pacifist, he was a just man. Neither were any of the great heroic figures of the Bible. But, again, I mean, there are, you know, the question of how to act in a given time is many times is very subjective. Everybody has their own opinions on it. And halacha really cannot dictate the political reality. Halacha, the Torah, recognizes all areas of knowledge. The Torah does not tell a person what kind of medicine to take. It tells a person to go to the physician. You know something about warfare, you have to ask a general. The only thing we do say about the Torah personality is that a great Torah personality is most adept at thinking unemotionally. In other words, if you go to a great Torah mind, because of his practice in the study of Torah, his mind has been trained how to think in a way that emotions do not enter the picture and do not cloud the situation, because that's the training of Torah. So we say such an individual, if he is, if he given all things are equal, he will be able to give you the most rational approach. But of course, you have to have the knowledge of the specific situation, and Torah personalities don't always have the knowledge of the specifics in every area. So we do recognize the importance of consulting Torah personalities when they have the information that we do. Because although halachically it's binding, one does not have to follow a Torah personality except in the area of halacha. I mean, it's not binding. But the Torah does recognize the fact that a Torah scholar is one who is wise in all his endeavors, as the prophet says about King David. And David was intelligent, wise in all his ways, and God was with him. And as we find in the beginning of Joshua, that God says to Joshua, if you follow the ways of the Torah, you'll be wise in everything you do, and you'll be successful. So you see, the Torah has transference value to every area of thought. But of course, as I said before, you have to have knowledge of the area of thought. Now, I don't claim to be a political scientist, so therefore, I am not saying that I agree with the particular position that I just expressed before. Nevertheless, I'm using it as an illustration that if a society does not live in a rational way, then evil will befall even the righteous in that society, according to Torah, and God will not necessarily save, intervene, and see. Certainly will not intervene and save every righteous person. This we see from the story of Sodom, where Abraham asked God, how many people in this society have to be righteous in order for you to protect the entire society? And the lowest number was 10, which means that there could have been 9 righteous people there, but they would perish in Sodom, which means that Sodom has a responsibility for those righteous people, and God will not intervene necessarily to save their lives. He can, but he not necessarily. I mean, you know, prophets were killed also. Isaiah was killed, and even prophets were not afforded protection by God, divine protection in many instances. But the Torah teaches us one thing. We have to look into the Torah to see the kind of world that God gives us, and we cannot simply sit back and wish a kind of world that we want. That is a childish thing, which religions, man-made religions, always do. They make up these fantasies. They decide what God's going to do, what he's not going to do, and then they make up all kinds of crazy things. If I shake and go into a fervor, the snake's not going to bite me, and all these other kind of nonsense, because they wish a world which they want to see. But the Torah, the individual who studies Torah, does not do that. The Bible is the book which teaches man what God's world is and the framework which he gave us. And we have to accept that. That's God's wisdom. We may want God to intervene and protect the man from every tragedy. Unfortunately, because God's wisdom is supreme. But I'm just saying it in jest. Unfortunately, that's not the way the world works. But we have to conform to the world that God has created, and the whole story of everything the Bible talks about is, it teaches us when God does intervene, when he doesn't intervene. When does he save a righteous person? When doesn't he save a righteous person? We may, of course, would be very nice if he'd always save a righteous person. That would be our idea of the proper way to run the world. But that's not the way God runs his world. So we have to subordinate ourselves to the way that God runs the world. And God judges individuals, and he also judges societies. And in the judgment of societies, a righteous person can be caught, and that is a fact. The Torah does not describe any kind of mystical. Rabbi Chaim Zimmerman, he passed away recently. He's a great Torah scholar, and he made a statement which to my mind is very accurate. He says, there is no such thing as Jewish mysticism. That's a misnomer. Jewish is not mystical. There are Jewish mystics, but there's no them. If you look at the Bible does not present any kind of mysticism. people have projected mysticism onto the Bible, but if you just look at the words of the Torah itself, you will not find any kind of indication whatsoever. As a matter of fact, it's exactly the contrary. And the Torah always abhors any kind of powers other than the Creator Himself. But people keep on projecting because people have very cherished beliefs. This stems from the primitive part of man. The most difficult thing for man to do, whether it's Ben Israel or Ben Noach, is simply to accept what tells us about God and how he runs the world, because it's not going to be in accordance with our private emotions. And that is really the challenge of life, is to be able to accept the reality that the Torah teaches us about God and not the childish notions that we have about how God should do things. This is primitive, and this is what every religion teaches and espouses. Just to give you an example about the people believe that there are powers in the stars and the planets. They have effects on us. Does the Torah say anything like that? Take a look in the beginning of Genesis. What does it say? It says that in the fourth day that God said that all these planets and the sun and the moon and the stars that relate to man are there for one, for signs and for days and for nights and for seasons, which means to say they simply have a practical function. That's all. That is the greatness of Torah, is that you see there was no nation for centuries and centuries, more than 1,000 years, which didn't have astrology, except the people of Israel, because they got it from the Torah itself. That is absolute nonsense. That there are no powers out there, and the stars have no powers, the planets have no powers. These are by God, because they help man. These things were created. The ones that, it's not speaking about the entire universe. It's just speaking about the part of the universe that affects us. And this was programmed into creation that that our planet should have a sun, a moon, and the stars, the various stars. A person is on a ship, he could see a north star, it's a sign, he knows the direction. This was all pre-programmed into creation so that man can have what he needs, and it only has a functional value, but there is no other value there. But as much as the Torah says, and by the way, if you look at Psalms 104, he says, what did he say? He says God created the moon for in order to be able to determine time periods, a monthly cycle. And Psalms 104 is a beautiful psalm where he describes nature, and he shows the ecology is all created with God's wisdom, and everything in nature has its place. And he mentions how the multifarious type of life that exists in the sea, and the nighttime in the forest, and the various animals live at night, and different ones live at daytime. It's one of the most beautiful psalms. I think that it was written centuries and centuries ago, thousands of years ago, and yet you can read it today, and it has such beauty to it, and it shows you how everything is created with God's wisdom, and the planets and are all there for man to have seasons and day and night, and that's the only purpose of these things, and it's all part of God's infinite wisdom. There are no forces, powers out there. This is all primitive type of nonsense. And that's why I say that the people will always project onto the Torah this kind of primitivism, but there is nowhere in the Torah itself that such ideas are expressed. On the contrary, the Torah expresses ideas of the most profound type. It recognizes the laws of nature, and it recognizes the fact that man's purpose in creation is to understand nature, to use his mind, to use his intelligence, and then to understand Torah. And the Torah itself prohibits any kind of activity which is nonsensical, irrational, and is man-made. By the way, if you look in the Encyclopedia of Philosophy, It will tell you that there's no such thing as a definition of religion. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I will tell you what a definition of religion in my mind, which is a definition, and there are various definitions that were given. They all have difficulties. I think there's one simple definition, and I don't see any difficulty with it, because I think it's true in every religion. The definition of religion is when man tries to act in a way that he's doing something which he thinks is a cause that's going to affect something else, but this cause has no basis in reality whatsoever, which means a person will sit trance and think that by going to this trance, he's going to help somebody be healed. In other words, it's invoking causality, trying to use causality in a way where there is no real, according to reality and according to the human mind. So it's a foreign kind, it's an attempt to introduce a foreign kind of causality that doesn't exist, basically, except in the fantasy and the imagination of a human being. And the Torah is very much against that. There is, I'll give you an example, a question came to me this week that was supposed to go to a graduation. And he said, well, what's wrong with going to graduation? Well, there's a problem, according to halacha, because in graduations, people wear caps and gowns. Now, there is a big question in halacha, a debate, actually, among two groups of scholars. The Tosafists prohibit one from engaging in any kind of ritual action, which means, you see, we don't have any rituals or ceremonies. We only have halacha. And any kind of ceremonious action is prohibited. The Tosafists say as follows. They say that there are two kinds of ceremonials among the nations. One type is religious ceremonials, and this certainly is prohibited because that's idolatrous. But the other kind he calls ceremonies ceremonies of stupidity and nonsense, which means basically that any kind of ceremony that's man-made is totally nonsensical and prohibited, according to the Tosafists. There are those that argue with the Tosafists, and they maintain that as long as it's not of a religious type, it is permissible. Okay? This happens to be an argument. But according to the Tosafists, any kind of ceremonial is prohibited, which would mean a graduation ceremonial. That's basically a nonsensical thing. It's very sensible to study and to learn, but the ritual of graduation, where you have people marching down with special caps and gowns, is really silly and stupid. The Torah doesn't recognize such type of actions. We don't have and we don't believe in such kind of actions, and according to the Tosafists, it is strictly prohibited. So the whole institution of ceremony, according to the concepts of the Torah, is a nonsensical action, and according to many authorities, it is actually prohibited. So all these kind of things stem from the primitive part of man's mind. It teaches a person to rise above that part of an individual's mind and to do things for only two reasons: either because it's rational to do the thing, it makes sense, or else because God instructed one to do so, which again, of course, is rational, but there it's rational based upon the fact that God instructed man to do that. So those are the only two types of actions that are permissible. And that's why I mentioned last week, I said that's why B'nai Noach is the strangest religion, because it has no ritual or ceremony. And this is something which people find difficult, but that really is the beauty of the religion, because the Torah could not give the B'nai Noach any kind of mandatory performance, because it wouldn't take long until it became simply a ceremony and a ritual, not a halacha. In order to have halacha, you must have instruction. And then, of course, if there were instruction, then you'd have to have more than seven laws. You'd have a whole system of scholarship, and it would be mandatory to have scholarship, like it is among the people of Israel. But the seven laws are supposed to be very basic. So therefore, what God did was, he simply did not instruct the Benoach to do anything positive, any kind of mitzvah even, because that would might become reduced to ceremony. But he gave them the option, if they wish to do a mitzvah, they can, but then, of course, they have to go to the Ben Israel to learn what exactly the mitzvah is and what halacha is, so that they can, when they do it, it should be an intelligent performance, not a, simply a ceremonious act. So this is the entire Torah stands up any kind of primitivism or actions that are nonsensical, and that's why it's not permitted for a person is not permitted to invent his own kind of things that he does, his own kind of practices, no matter what area it might be, because that again is part of primitive man. That's the same part of man that creates religions. That the people, they feel that they do certain things, or they eat certain things, or they don't eat certain things, and these things that they do make them special and closer to God. That is just primitivism and egoism, and that's what all religions try to do. And even with regard to a given law, you're not permitted to create any stipulations about it. For instance, prayer. Like, let's say, for instance, this Ben Israel or Ben Noach makes no difference. Let's say a group of Jews will get together, and they'll say, well, we're going to, just us, we're going to pray this special prayer. That, again, is egotism and nonsensical and... it does not exist. We are allowed to. We're supposed to pray. That's by the way, the idea of praying with a quorum. But it shouldn't be a private. The prayer should not be just a private affair. A person has to recognize it's not just you that prays to God. Everyone, the entire community, is prays to God. It takes away a person from their egocentricity. But people who are egocentric like to think they're special. And either they have their own special little thing with God, or else they get a little group together and they feel that they're special people. This is really primitivism, egoism, and it's the same emotions that are responsible for man-made religions. So the Torah is very strongly opposed to that kind of a thing. That's why the Torah did not give any positive commandments to the Ben Noach, although it did leave it optional. If the Ben Noach studies the Torah, has the opportunity to study the Torah from the Ben Israel, and he learns the commandment and he understands it, then certainly he is permitted to do it. The question, I hope that I was able to answer that the question was that was originally raised. With regard to the specifics of the... Yes.
Rabbi, he said after you separated the political from the equation and made that, he was okay with it.
Okay.
Making that distinction, it was okay. He didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
It's about time to turn the tape over, so I think we can do that.